You're listening to KMXT Kodiak 100.1 FM. KMXT is also in HD, and we have HD2 and HD3 as well. We're also streaming live on the web at kmxt.org. It's just about noon here in Kodiak. It's fair skies and breezy, 24 degrees, northwest winds, 21 miles per hour, gusts up to 31. It's feeling a little chilly out there. This afternoon it's supposed to be sunny and clear tonight, highs up to 25, lows bottoming out to about 10 degrees. It's going to be even colder. Gusts up to 25 miles per hour throughout the day. We'll have your midday report after NPR headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Windsor Johnston. The International Court of Justice in The Hague is ordering Israel to take all measures within its power to prevent acts of genocide against Palestinians in Gaza. The top UN court stopped short of ordering a ceasefire requested by South Africa while it hears a full case accusing Israeli forces of genocide in the enclave. National Security Council spokesman John Kirby weighed in on the decision today at the White House.
I think the court's ruling is consistent with many of our positions and much of the approach that we've taken with Israel.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu was quick to blast the court's ruling, slamming the genocide allegation against his country as not only false, but outrageous. The United States is pausing its funding to the main UN agency that helps Palestinians. NPR's Michelle Kellerman reports the move comes after some UN employees were implicated in the attack carried out by Hamas against Israel on October 7th.
The State Department says it is extremely troubled by the allegations against 12 employees of UNRWA, the UN agency that aids Palestinians. Secretary of State Antony Blinken spoke with the UN Secretary General about this and called for a swift investigation. Secretary General Antonio Guterres also put out a statement saying he's horrified by the allegations, and he says any UN employee who participated in the October 7th attack or any other criminal activity should be fired and face possible criminal prosecution. The UN has not provided details about the allegations. Michelle Kellerman, NPR News, the State Department.
Some grounded Boeing 737 MAX 9 aircraft are expected to begin flying again as soon as today. NPR's Joel Rose reports Alaska and United Airlines are working to get their planes inspected and cleared to fly.
Alaska Airlines has put several Boeing 737 MAX 9 jets back on its schedule, 3 weeks to the day after a door plug panel blew off a plane in midair. Alaska CEO Ben Minicucci says the planes will be safe to fly after they're inspected, and he predicted to investors that the airline's customers will return.
We don't expect a brand-related long-term impact. Right now, I think we expect our guests to come back to us.
For customers who are uncomfortable flying on a 737 MAX 9, Alaska and United Airlines both say they'll work to rebook those passengers on different flights. Joel Rose, NPR News, Washington.
At last check on Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrial Average was up 60 points. The S&P 500 traded lower, down 3. The Nasdaq Composite down 55 points. This is NPR News in Washington. The Sundance Film Festival in Park City, Utah, is celebrating 40 years of discovering and presenting independent films. As NPR's Mandalita Barco reports, the festival also handed out awards today.
This year's Sundance Grand Jury Prize for Drama went to In the Summers, a film by Alessandra La Corraza. In a video, she explained what it's about.
I made this film as a way to understand my father and our fractured relationship, and to see a different kind of queer and Latin representation.
La Corraza also picked up the festival's Director's Award. Filmmaker Sean Wong got two major Sundance Awards for his semi-autobiographical film Didi, whose ensemble cast includes many first-time actors and his grandmother. The documentary Daughters, about Black girls and their incarcerated fathers, also received the Sundance Audience Award and Festival Favorite Award. Among the other big winners at Sundance was Porcelain War, a documentary about artists-turned-soldiers in the Ukraine. Mandalit Del Barco, NPR News.
The White House says it will pause new natural gas export facilities. White House National Climate Advisor Ali Zaidi says the move will give the administration more time to analyze impacts on climate, the economy, and national security before greenlighting new projects.
These are the analyses that underpin the way the Department of Energy makes decisions about these authorization applications.
The pause could interfere with a $10 billion natural gas project in Louisiana, which would be the largest export terminal in the country. I'm Windsor Johnston, NPR News, in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Luminescence Foundation, dedicated to shedding light on neurological research focused on Alzheimer's and Parkinson's diseases and supporting land conservation initiatives, and the listeners who support this NPR station.
And it's 12:06 here in Kodiak. I'm Brian Benoit. It's time for the Midday Report. The Alaska legislative session started last week, and Kodiak's delegation has already introduced a slew of bills to the floor. According to the Alaska Beacon, Representative Louise Stutes has three bills in the House, as well as one House concurrent resolution so far. HB 18 would have the state help create nonprofit regional fishing cooperatives with the goal to develop new fisheries. Funding for the nonprofits would come from fees paid by fishermen. HB 19 would reduce some paperwork for fishing fleets. If a boat is registered with the Coast Guard, it would no longer have to register separately with the state's Department of Motor Vehicles. HB 20 would make it possible for members of the Board of Fish and Board of Game to debate and vote on issues despite conflicts of interest. And Senate President Gary Stevens also has a handful of bills he's pushing in the state Senate. SB 89 proposes a new tax on electronic cigarette products and raises the minimum age to buy or sell those products to 21 years old. The Senate passed SB 89 in the last legislative session, but the House did not. Stevens is also co-sponsoring SB 88 alongside Kathy Giesel of Anchorage and Click Bishop of Fairbanks. The bill would establish a pension program for state employees. More information about the progress of each bill can be found on the Alaska Legislature's website. And Kodiak's first responders have been struggling with a dozen vacant positions between both the fire and police departments. Both fire and police chiefs say a lack of affordable housing options in the city has exacerbated the shortage. KMXT's Davis Hovey reports.
Tim Putney is the Kodiak police chief and has been with the department for over 20 years. In a joint letter with the fire department to the city council earlier this month, Putney told the council that the last time the police department hired a patrol officer was over a year ago.
You know, we kind of just said, hey, we're having a hard time finding people. And when we do find people, it's rare that they even follow through with moving to Kodiak because they all start looking at the housing market and the rental market and they kind of give up before they even make any serious plans to get here. So it takes a lot of time, energy, and resources to get somebody to that point.
The Kodiak Police Department currently has four vacant patrol officer positions and three open positions in corrections. KPD has not been able to staff a school resources officer in several years. Their canine unit has also been disbanded. Fire Chief Frank Dorner said in the joint letter his department is currently down six positions. Both departments are asking the City Council to look at public safety housing initiatives to address the problem, such as providing temporary housing just for first responders. Other options the police department is considering include hiring more local people, adjusting officers' shift schedule, and possibly increasing wages. There are a variety of ideas Putney has considered, but he says the housing shortage must be the first obstacle to overcome in order to fill long-term vacancies.
Maybe there's something like the military does where you give somebody a stipend for housing as another possibility. Not necessarily advocating for the city to get into the landlord business. I think we should probably just stick to trying to make property available and making sure we can get utilities there and letting the private industry come in and set that up.
The Kodiak City Council discussed the letter from the fire and police departments on Tuesday during a work session. A potential solution for the city is state funding dedicated to professional housing in rural communities. Deputy City Manager Josie Banky told council members the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation's Rural Professional Housing Program offers the city a few options for procuring new housing.
This particular grant program can be used for new construction, rehab, or purchase of new property. So those options are wide open to us.
Even though more funding is earmarked for fiscal year 2025, there are no guarantees that all the money will be approved. And even if it is, construction of new homes in Kodiak could still take years under the Rural Professional Housing Program. The City Council plans to update their State Capital Improvement Program list during an upcoming meeting in February and include support for the statewide housing program. Regardless of what the City Council decides to do, Chief Putney says next month, KPD will no longer have a detective. Starting in February, the police department's lone detective will be spending their time on patrols to help fill the gaps in coverage. Reporting in Kodiak, I'm Davis Hovey.
And a Kodiak woman has been arrested for involvement in a drug trafficking investigation. Alaska State Troopers say 56-year-old Tessa Creamer was contacted by the statewide drug enforcement unit in Kodiak earlier this month. Creamer was found to be carrying 400 grams of crystal meth, which is believed to have been distributed locally. She was remanded to the Kodiak jail for misconduct involving a controlled substance in the third degree. Court records show Creamer was arraigned at Kodiak Courthouse last week. Anyone with information about drug activity can report it anonymously by calling the Alaska State Troopers Kodiak office and asking to speak with a drug investigator. And federal authorities also announced on Thursday that 53 people have been charged in 9 indictments in connection to an international drug trafficking ring targeting Alaska communities. At a press conference, U.S. Attorney for Alaska, Lane Tucker, said the defendants conspired to bring fentanyl, cocaine, heroin, and methamphetamine from Mexico into the state between February 2022 and July 2023.
The criminal enterprise allegedly sent drugs to Anchorage, Dillingham, Fairbanks, Good News Bay, Ketchikan, Kodiak, Nustoyahook, Palmer, Sandpoint, Savunga, Sitka, Togiak, Tyonek, and Wasilla.
The drug ring was allegedly headed by 57-year-old Heraclio Sanchez Rodriguez, a California inmate who's accused of using phones smuggled into prison to communicate with suppliers in Mexico and people in Oregon and California who shipped the drugs to Alaska. A high-level associate of Sanchez Rodriguez, 38-year-old Christina Quintana, is alleged to have recruited inmates set for release from Hilland Mountain Correctional Center to participate in the drug ring while she was serving time there as well. Tucker says Sanchez Rodriguez's alleged accomplices sent drugs, mainly fentanyl, through the mail and distributed them within Alaska communities. Grand juries have been handing up indictments of drug ring members since June of last year.
The indictments also include charges against members of the organization in North Pole for the distribution of fentanyl, resulting in the overdose death of Adam Sekinen. We have also charged over 25 defendants in this case with money laundering conspiracy to promote the drug trafficking organization.
The drug trafficking ring is also connected to the kidnapping and murders of at least 2 Sunday Powers and Kami Clark last May, according to the charging docs. Over the course of the investigation, officials say law enforcement officers intercepted hundreds of thousands of fentanyl pills in addition to other narcotics. Tucker says the sheer volume of the drugs flowing into rural Alaska communities could have potentially led to many deaths.
There were 44 lethal doses for every person in Togiak, I believe it was. So in some of these communities, there were enough lethal doses to kill the communities several times over.
Tucker says all 53 people charged in the indictments have been taken into custody as of yesterday. And rural Alaska communities need more than $4 billion over the next 50 years to address the devastating impacts of human-caused climate change on local infrastructure. That's according to a new report released by the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium. Alaska Public Media's Kavitha George has this report.
Phil Tracy Sr. has lived in the North Slope community of Point Lay for more than 50 years. He says thawing permafrost is transforming the landscape and has destroyed much of the village's piped water and sewer system. Unpredictable freeze-thaw cycles have bent the pipes so much, he says they look like roller coasters. About two-thirds of the system is unusable.
65-70% of it is abandoned now, and we're putting everybody on holding tanks
those separate holding tanks store water and sewage for a household. Tracy says it's hard to keep sewage tanks emptied and water tanks filled, especially because many homes are overcrowded due to the region's chronic housing shortage.
Our houses have two or three generations living in them, and that water tank is empty almost every 2 days.
And THC's Unmet Needs report includes many stories like Point Lay's. Erosion along the Kuskokwim River is threatening McGrath's powerhouse and landfill. Thawing permafrost in Quinnahock may soon crack the foundation under the village's health clinic and laundry facility. Rural communities need at least $80 million more annually to address major infrastructure challenges like these, the report finds. It calls on the federal government to create a dedicated pot of money to cover the funding gap. The report says state and federal agencies should think more proactively about addressing climate change in rural Alaska. Jackie Schaefer, Director of Climate Initiatives for ANTHC, says governments should invest in more resilient infrastructure now to avoid bigger, more expensive disasters in the future. Infrastructure like homes with adjustable foundations that can be more easily moved.
We could create future housing that is adaptable, where right now we don't have that. We're having to either tear down houses or relocate them, and it's very, very expensive in rural Alaska.
In addition to the $80 million funding gap, the report says, what money is available is difficult to access. Federal programs to help communities adapt to climate change are scattered across multiple agencies, and funding often requires time-consuming grant applications, which are difficult for small communities without dedicated staff. In Point Lay, Tracy says, people are already stretched trying to feed their families and make sure basic village services are taken care of.
You make phone calls all day long to different agencies, and they'll direct you to another agency, and et cetera, and so on. So when you're fighting a disaster, you really don't have the time to make a phone call. Hey, I need help. The help has got to be pre-planned so it's ready to move in.
Schaefer says while Alaska is on the front lines of climate change today, climate-related infrastructure challenges are going to be a major problem nationwide. She hopes if government agencies can develop better ways to respond to climate change in Alaska, the state can serve as a model for addressing the issue nationwide. In Anchorage, I'm Kavitha George.
In our last story for this midday report, lawmakers and observers are expressing concerns over a series of executive orders from Governor Mike Dunleavy that he unveiled earlier this month. That's 12 orders largely eliminating or reorganizing a wide range of boards and commissions. Alaska Public Media's Eric Stone reports the legislature can vote them down, but they need to act fast.
Before this month, Alaska's governors had issued 123 executive orders since statehood. Earlier this month, that number jumped 10% with a series of actions unveiled by the Dunleavy administration as lawmakers gathered in Juneau. And that's a lot, says Kodiak Republican Senator Gary Stevens, the Senate president.
We have never, in my experience, had 12 executive orders to deal with all at once.
The legislature has 60 days from the start of the session to consider them. Lawmakers can call a joint session and, with a majority vote, prevent them from becoming law. That means the clock expires in mid-March. Stevens has referred all 12 to various Senate committees for a closer look, and he says senators have sent them off for legal review.
We want to deal with these very quickly. We don't want to see these become law without having a chance to thoroughly vet them and discuss them.
The Alaska Constitution allows the governor to reorganize the executive branch to provide for, quote, efficient administration. Through his communication staff, Dunleavy declined an interview for this story. But in a prepared statement, spokesperson Jessica Bowers said the purpose of the orders was to, quote, make state government as efficient and effective as possible. In this case, most of the orders would eliminate or reorganize various state boards. One would restructure the Alaska Marine Highway Operations Board, which advises state leaders on management of the ferry system. The order would allow the governor to appoint all 9 members. Stevens, a longtime booster of the ferry system, says the legislative appointments, currently there are 4, allow for a wider variety of input from coastal communities.
It's an important authority that the legislature has, and personally I would be very hesitant to give that up.
The ferry board doesn't have much legal power. Its job is to provide advice that the state may or may not follow. That's the case for several other advisory boards that Dunleavy has proposed eliminating: the Alaska Council on EMS, the Criminal Justice Information Advisory Board, and the Recreation Rivers Advisory Board, to name a few. But some of the boards that would be eliminated do more than give the state advice. Take the Wood-Tikchik State Park Management Council. It's a 7-member group responsible for 1.6 million acres of land at the headwaters of Bristol Bay.
That has worked excellent since the park's been created.
Robin Samuelson spent 15 years on the Management Council, including a stint as chairman. It's made up of representatives from the towns, villages, and tribes surrounding the park, and includes representatives from the governor's administration. Samuelson says he's concerned Dunleavy's plan to eliminate the board could be a first step towards opening the park to resource development.
I do know that there's a number of mining companies that are just north of the Wood-Tikchik State Park. This governor is in love with the mining companies.
Bowers, the spokesperson for the governor, said the order was not issued at the request of any individual or entity. The executive order would not change the existing management plan, though it would allow the Department of Natural Resources to modify it. However, it would not change an existing law that prohibits mining within the park's boundaries. A number of boards that would be eliminated have regulatory power. For instance, the Board of Massage Therapists, which regulates the massage industry, would be eliminated, with its responsibilities turned over to the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. Another order gives the Fish and Game Commissioner the authority to prohibit, quote, the live capture, possession, transport, or release of native or exotic game or their eggs. House Majority Leader Dan Sadler, an Anchorage Republican, says legislators plan to look closely at the orders.
Having been at boards and commissions for a while, I know that there are some boards that may benefit from some more efficient operations, but we'll consider each on its own merits and make decisions, and that'll just come out in the process of committee meetings.
Hearings on the orders are expected to begin in the coming weeks. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Eric Stone.
And that's it for your local news. We'll be back in just a minute.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
The economy might be a bit closer to that soft landing. I'm Nova Safo with the Marketplace Minute. The Federal Reserve's preferred inflation gauge is showing signs of further cooling. Between November and December, prices rose 0.2%, according to the Commerce Department. On an annual basis, the inflation rate was unchanged, but some analysts pointed out that the six-month average, a more forward-looking indicator, was below 2%. That's the Fed's target rate. It's been raising interest rates to get there and is hoping to do so without causing a recession. That's the soft landing. JetBlue has informed Spirit Airlines that it may terminate their merger agreement within days. This is not a surprise. Earlier this month, a federal judge blocked the proposed tie-up on antitrust grounds. But JetBlue says it's still evaluating options. I'm Nova Safo with the Marketplace Minute.
Marketplace Minute is supported by KeyBank. Learn more at key.com/sustainability.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Today is Friday, January 26, 2024, and the sunrise today was at 9:24 a.m. The sunset will be at 5:20 p.m. That makes for 7 hours, 56 minutes of daylight, about 4 minutes more than yesterday. The record high today was 46 degrees in 1929. The record low was -2 in 1973. Right now here in Kodiak, it's fair and breezy, just about in the mid-20s. Northwest winds 21 miles per hour, gusts up to 31. It's going to be sunny today, clear tomorrow, but those winds are going to be gusting between 25 and 30 miles per hour. Looks like Saturday and Sunday are also going to be pretty sunny and clear looking at your weekend. Taking a look at the tides over here in the Kodiak District, that low tide bottomed out at 8:03 a.m. of 2.8 feet. The high tide will peak this afternoon of 2:05 p.m. of 9.5 feet. And the low tide will bottom out one more time at 8:51 of -0.8 feet. Over on the west side of the island, over in Larsen Bay, that low tide bottomed out 8:51 a.m. of 3.7 feet. The high tide will peak at 2:37 p.m. of 14.6 feet. And the low tide will bottom out one last time at 9:22 p.m. of -1.4 feet. Going into community announcements, there's a personal message. A memorial service for Francis Sandin will be held at the St. Mary's Church on Saturday, January 27th at 1 p.m. A repast will follow in the Best Western Harbor Room from 3 to 6 p.m. And from the Kodiak Public Library, Wednesdays at 3:30 p.m. is Lego Club. Children under 10 must be accompanied by an adult. There's also Traveler's Destination featuring Roy and Crystal Thomas's journey to Tanzania and Mount Kilimanjaro. You can come learn about their hikes and view their images of beautiful vistas. And again, that's Wednesday, January 31 at 6:30 p.m. It's open to everyone. Thursday at 10:30 a.m. is preschool story time for children aged 3 through 6. And Fridays at 10:30 a.m., the library hosts Lapsit story time for babies up to 3. Join in the genre reading challenge that runs through February. Try reading from different genres and record your reading in a bingo card at kodiak.beanstack.org and earn prizes and learn something new. For more information, you can ask for help at the front desk at the library. And Kodiak's Fish and Game Advisory Committee Transporter Working Group will hold a public meeting on Monday, January 29th. At 1:30 p.m. in the Kodiak Fish and Game Office in the Chiniac Room and online via teleconference and on Zoom. For more information, you can contact Natalie Romo at 907-843-9491. Caregivers of Kodiak's youngest community members are invited to the Diaper Distribution Center for free diapers and wipes on the fourth Friday of every month from 4 to 7 p.m. Diapers are available in all sizes on a first-come, first-served basis while supplies last, and size swaps are welcome as well. You can bring outgrown diapers in good condition and trade them in for your baby's current size. That's at 1910 East Rezanoff. The Diaper Distribution Center is a ministry of Frontier Southern Baptist Church. The next distribution day will be today from 4 to 7 p.m. And we have Kodiak Island Borough's Notice of Public Meetings. The upcoming ones are on January 30th, which is Joint Building Code Review Committee regular meeting, Borough Conference Room, and also on January 30th at 5:15 p.m., the Solid Waste Advisory Board has their regular meeting as well, the Kodiak Fisheries Research Center Conference Room, and on February 1st, there's an Assembly regular meeting in the Borough Assembly Chambers. Agendas are available online. And the Kodiak Soil and Water Conservation District is calling all Kodiak's agricultural enthusiasts, including chicken farmers, ranchers, growers, and gardeners. There will be a talk about challenges of agriculture in Kodiak and solutions people have developed. They'll also discuss future workshops that would be helpful, including brief program introductions available to assist agricultural producers in Kodiak. That's at the Kodiak Public Library, Thursday, February 1st, that's next week, from 4 p.m. to 5:30 p.m. The Kodiak Middle School is also putting together The Outsiders, adapted by Christopher Sergel from the book by S.E. Hinton. Admission is $3 for students and seniors or $5 for adults. That's Friday and Saturday, February 2nd and 3rd at 7 p.m. in the Drama Pod. It's also produced by special arrangement with the Drama Publishing Company of Woodstock, Illinois. That's it for your midday report. Thanks again for tuning in. We'll be back with Byways.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the midday report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.
Hello, Kodiak, and welcome to the January 26th edition of Island Byways. I'm Pam Foreman. If the forecast holds, we're in for a sunny, cold but beautiful weekend. It should be great weather for all sorts of outdoor adventures, from skiing and sledding to walks on the beach. Remember to layer up in your warmest layers and stay hydrated. And if you're headed into the alpine backcountry, take a buddy, a beacon, and a rescue shovel. If we're lucky, conditions will be just right for the formation of hoarfrost. The surface temperature of the trees, grasses, and bushes needs to be below 32 degrees. I don't think we're going to have a problem with that. Then when water vapor falls on that cold surface, ice crystals start to form right away. And then more vapor, more ice crystals, and those crazy crystals just keep on going. That water vapor is why we see hoarfrost more frequently near streams or lakes. Hoarfrost makes ordinary grasses look magical, and it's a macro photographer's dream. I'm hopeful we'll see plenty of it this weekend. There's some live music events going on this weekend, perfect for warming your bones after your outdoor adventures. On Friday night, Tyson Davis of Blackwater Railroad plays solo at Kodiak Marketplace at 7 p.m. It's music for all ages, and tickets are available at the door. But bring cash! And then on Saturday, Tyson and two local musicians, Drew Sablon and Ellamy Tiller, will share the stage for Songwriters in the Round, a couple of hours of great music starting at 8 p.m. at Tony's Bar. Tickets will be available at the door. Wherever your adventures take you this week, have fun and stay safe and warm out there. Thanks for listening.